Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
This is referee Justin King, and I got the pleasure of being with the Vegas Bad Boys. This podcast, you don't want to miss it.
Hey, this is Matt Michaels and Sin City Steve, and we are here with the one and only Gabriel Gallo. Gallo, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Just, quarantining and trying not to go stir sitting here at the coffee. How about you? How's everything going with you guys?
Well, I was just going to say, what have you found the most relaxing part of this and the most difficult part of this? Because personally, the most difficult part of this is not being able to go out and just, if you want to go see a movie, just go see a movie or, go listen to some music or something like that. And the most relaxing part is the fact that I don't have any pressures or deadlines per se right now.
Well, I don't know. The thing is I already kind of self-isolated to begin with.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like people, but I don't like people.
Yeah.
I'm always either with wrestling or any of my other, money-making endeavors, I'm surrounded by people all the time.
Yeah.
So I already self-quarantine basically. I'd stay at my house and I'd do stuff, or I'd go on trips. But now the fact that I'm being told I can't, it's driving me insane. Because I'm like, what do you mean I can't? Yes, I can. I'm a rebel anyway. If you tell me one thing, I can't do it. Oh, no. As you can see in wrestling, you tell me one thing, and I'm going to do the exact opposite just to prove wrong. So that part's driving me crazy. But as for everything else, it's kind of weird. As much as I like the blood and guts and smashing people's skulls, I'm kind of like a zen guy. I like gardening and everything. So with all this stuff, I've been able to work on my garden and my yard at home and making it very nice for me to sit around my fire and drink my mead and debate, argue and debate with my roommate Val Venus, things like that.
So. Oh my God. That's a fucking reality show right there.
You have no idea. You have no idea.
Wow. How is that going for you guys? Are you guys ready to kill each other yet? Or is everything still cool?
Oh no, we're fine. We're used to getting into knockdown, drag out arguments over many things, but no, we're fine. We get along great. He's working at the dispensary and he's setting up, he's using our yard. He's setting up his Canopy Farms.
Nice.
Line. So, and since I already have done home gardening, my family had a farm in Illinois for years. And that's always been something I've done. And I help him out and show him how to do other things. And he's showing me how to grow microgreens and everything else.
Oh, nice.
It's interesting. When we're not debating politics or debating, whatever it is that we're debating, we're working on that. So we're keeping ourselves occupied.
Where in Illinois did your parents have the farm?
My grandparents had a farm in Macomb.
Macomb, okay.
Outside the University of Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
We were about 12 miles outside of town. So we were right in between Colchester and Macomb, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
On a farm that had at one time it was 30,000 acres or something like that. But when I was going out there, they only had maybe 80 or 100 acres of soybean and corn. And then my grandma had a giant orchard.
Wow.
And her own little home garden. So she would show me, I'd go out there every summer from when I was a child. And she would show me all the ways that they grew up, because she was from the Depression era. So they were very self-contained.
Right.
And self-sufficient. And she showed me all this stuff that I took with me into the future. And, now I use it to keep myself entertained,
Yeah. Yeah. So. Now I went to college at Illinois State University. So I absolutely know of Macomb.
Yeah. It's a nice little town,
Yeah.
With a huge university in it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
most definitely, man. Yeah. And, now, Gallo, you had mentioned on your Instagram that the writings of H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard's Cthulhu mythos, they've been a huge influence on your life and creativity, and also lessons in an irrational fear. How have they influenced you?
Oh, man, I don't even, like, I always, well, before I got into wrestling, I wanted to be a writer.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay? Okay. And I used to write all kinds of stories, fantasy stories, and I wound up, I don't know how I heard about it, I don't really remember, but I started hearing about H.P. Lovecraft, and mm-hmm. I started reading his mythos, and then I found Robert E. Howard's Cthulhu mythos, which I really enjoy, probably more than H.P. Mm-hmm. Lovecraft, to tell you the truth, but, you know, obviously, Howard Lovecraft's books are the originals, and you just read these things, and they were so horrific and descriptive of the mm-hmm. dark that you can't control, or you can't, that waits outside, and it just, yeah, I remember it scared the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
Because it was something you can't control. And
right.
I started writing gothic horror stories.
Wow.
And it was just that darkness that waits outside humankind was just something that was, it made me realize that, like, because, you know, the writings of Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard based in reality, in the sense that they're all based on the Sumerian Emmanuelis and the Sumerian mm-hmm. mythology. Now, granted, they made a lot of, but when you look at what they made up, even the names, they do relate back to that Sumerian mythology, and that's the very first recorded history of mankind.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder, well, what if there is something worse out there than everything we create? That makes everything we do not scary at all.
Right.
You know, because there's these chaotic beings that literally have, you can't reason with them. Their whole purpose in life is, in existence, is chaos. And that's a freaky thing to think about, that you can't control it. Because no matter what happens in this earth, whether it's a nuclear war or it's a shooting or something like that, that's all human control. You know, it can be reasoned with, and you can stop somebody from doing it, you know, right. things like that. There's ways to stop it. But with these gothic horror stories, there's no reasoning with it. There's no containing it. There's no nothing. Once it's out, and its whole purpose is to destroy everything that is not chaos and bring it back to that perfect natural order of chaos. And it's just a freaky concept to think about, and it makes you feel very small when you start thinking about that kind of stuff. I don't know. It really influenced me a lot as a kid. And it made me a very dark little twisted kid.
Would you say that the COVID-19 could be an example of that, the Earth bringing itself back to its natural, you know, by essentially, you know, a disease thinning out the herd?
I caught a lot of heat for saying that. It's inhumane or something, like inhumane, but honestly, nature fixes itself.
Yeah.
The thing is that we've done since the years, granted, we create, that's the thing about humans, is we create our own. So we stop natural order in the sense that, you know, humans only live to a certain amount of time, hundreds of years, thousands of years. And just like any other animal, you know, the weak would always die and the strong would survive and carry on the breed. Well, we stopped that.
Right.
And nature, I think, is sometimes trying to right that.
Right.
You know, and of course, we're going to stop nature again, but that doesn't mean nature's going to not keep trying.
Right.
So, yeah, I think nature's going to try to thin out the herd. Nature doesn't want people to live to 120 years old as much as we do. You know, I think it is going to target that and try to make them, because that's what it does. Nature is nature.
Yeah.
It wants the strong to survive, and it will always cull the herd. You know, if you look at like places in say Canada, where they have huge amounts of caribou, you know, if you get rid of the wolves, well, then a disease will come in there and start wiping them out. There's nothing you can stop because the population gets too high.
Right.
And the population gets too weak, because the weak are allowed to live. And then next thing you know, half that population dies off.
Yep.
And it's just nature, you know. Unlike the caribou, though, is humans have the ability with reasoning to stop that.
Right.
And we will, you know. But eventually nature, I think, will find the recipe to fix it. which again kind of relates back to that chaos theory. It's a scary thing to think of, because how do you stop nature for long?
Right.
You can't.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And
that's something outside of human control, which scares people. And I kind of, that's why I, like in my wrestling, I think that that's why people believe me so much, is because I book chaos theory. I am that chaos.
Right.
You know, I am unreasonable. You can't reason with me. I just do it to do it.
So the evolution,
my Hellhound character is.
Yeah, the evolution of you getting to the Hellhound character. Let's kind of get into, at what point did you realize that you wanted to move from gothic novelist child to professional wrestler?
Honestly, I don't remember when. I think it was when I first saw WrestleMania 12 with Taker versus
Diesel.
I watched wrestling before that, you know,
yeah.
But I remember seeing Taker versus Diesel, and that was it. You know, I wanted to do that, and ever since then, that was my whole goal. I still wrote and I drew. I was really good at art, but once I actually started wrestling, I put all that to the wayside. And I put all the creativity into wrestling.
Yeah.
Which I've always had that darker character, even though, like, I wasn't, like, when I was teaming with Navajo at UPW, and they had him switch to the heel character, and he had me start teaming with him, I helped him start making it more modern with the fact, like, he would do the face paint, like the Skinwalker, and then I started doing the wrist tape where it was three going all the way up your arms. And,
right.
I started blowing the fire. I started doing the fire. So, because I wasn't good at doing the native character like he was. If he, you know, a lot more native and grew up in the culture more than I did.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I couldn't do the dancing and all that stuff, but I did like the dark. So, I became like a shaman character.
Right.
I would blow the fireballs. Mm. You know, like when we would go to Japan, I would throw the fire high in the air and make everybody freak out like he was doing a war dance, you know? it started there. You know, and then I just slowly progressed from there into many. You know, I tried many other characters, but eventually when this one popped up, it was just right. And it wasn't even a character. I was coming back from a neck injury, and I was going to do a Hellraiser character.
Ooh!
I was going to be like Pinhead and come out with the box.
and, oh wow!
And do things like that, and it just, because I am heathen. You know, I believe in the heathen religion. This just fit, and it naturally progressed into this character.
Yeah, it's...
Wow.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, definitely, man. Now, you mentioned Navajo Warrior, and for quite a while, you had tagged with him and worked with him. Obviously, he's known for being a well-respected, extremely knowledgeable person in this business. What's the best thing that you have learned from working with Navajo?
Honestly, there was tons of things. I can say one thing that I learned from him, but probably the best was always less is more.
Yeah.
You know, it was always huge on that. You know, work smarter, not harder. You know, everybody works hard.
Definitely.
Look at the ones that work the smartest, and they have the longest careers, and they have the ability to connect with the crowd. Other than movements, you know, other than doing moves. And that's what I really learned from him. If he goes and I wrestle, or he wrestles, or when he and I wrestle each other now, we don't actually do a whole hell of a lot. You know?
Yeah.
We are very aggressive and we bring the noise to each other. But it's very basic and it's very simple. But what we do is we connect with that crowd and use that connection to tell the story.
Right.
And that's really what he taught me, is stuff like that. Is you know, and it wasn't just him, because he brought me around everybody. You know, when I was teaming with him when I first started my first year, he trained me. Mm-hmm. Once you start bringing me in the road, next thing I know, I'm around Jimmy Snuka, you know,
yeah.
Hunter Valentine, Public Enemy. You know, those were the people I came up with. I didn't come up around the Daniels and all them until I was at UPW.
Right.
I was originally introduced to wrestling through the old timers. I was always around the vets, and they were the ones that taught me. So. Between him teaching me less and more, his other thing was, the biggest thing was probably always pay attention when you're in these locker rooms. Keep your mouth shut and your eyes and your ears open. You know, he used to do this thing where he'd be like, if I was talking too much, because that's what I tend to do still, he would like put his little fingers up on his hand and it would look like a bunny. And he would pop it across his hand, and then he would take another hand and smash the bunny on the head. And that was pretty much like, oh, shut the fuck up.
That's awesome.
Is there a story that you have, you know, since you were around Steve for so long, is there a story that sticks out to you in terms of something that happened on the road that was, you know, pretty funny? I've over the years, I've heard some really funny stories about traveling with Steve. And I just was wondering if you had anything that kind of struck that chord.
Tons of stuff. Tons of stuff. I can't even think of one thing. Like, besides being on the road with him and me all the time, because he and I, once we started teaming his native blood, you know, we were quite hot. We were on the road all the time.
Right.
But when we weren't doing just that, we were on the road with Hollywood and Knox. And eventually Nyker. Oh, you can't imagine all the stuff that happened. Or the Ballards. We'd be all on the road with the Ballards. It'd be all of us. Those carloads. Oh, I can't even tell you. But I remember one time specifically, I don't know if you know this, but Nav is very scared of snakes.
Okay.
Definitely afraid of snakes. Okay. And we were working for Floor Championship Wrestling at the time. And we used to go to like Billy Swamp Safari, where I'd find snakes and chase them around with them all the time. But we were doing a show at the Swamps, and I don't know if you know who he is, but Abuda Dean was on the show, the Snake Master, Snake Master Jeff. And he had this giant albino python. And Nav was in the corner of the locker room, and he's doing his makeup, you know, looking in his little mirror. And I go, hey, guys, watch this. And it was like me and Gangrel and, you know, Barbarian, all those guys that used to be on the FCW show back then. I took a snake, and I wrapped it all around Nav. And he's getting there, and he's getting done with his makeup, and he's putting stuff over, and he doesn't notice yet. He stands up, and he turns to get off his chair and turn, and he sees the tail of the snake.
Oh,
and he just freezes and stares at it, and then he turns and sits back down, and he kind of sits there a second. He gets up and he turns the other way, and then he sees the head of the snake.
Oh,
and he sits there, stares at it. He sits down, and then he gets up, turns all the way around, and he's turning around 360. He sees the snake wrapping all the way around him, and he just backs into the corner. And he's just staring at it. And I left him there for a good 5 minutes. All of us were laughing at him in the corner.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
little simple things, you know. By the time we were flying to Japan, and he was sleeping, and they brought me my food on the plane, and I had ordered, like, there was this like thing on there, it's a calamari, so I was thinking it was fried calamari or something, and it wasn't. It was raw calamari salad. So there's like raw tentacles in this thing. And I'm sitting there going, huh. And I just start putting it on him because he was sitting in front of me. By the time he woke up, he was completely covered in like tentacles and octopus. He wakes up, he's all, whoa! There's like tentacles all over.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh my God. Do you think that one of the best things is the camaraderie? Do you think that when you have a good relationship like that with, you know, any of the boys, that is something that translates so well into the in-ring work itself?
Yeah, it doesn't happen all the time, you know, because sometimes there's just, you can be really good with someone and just not have that.
Right.
But for the most part, I think the better you know someone, the better the match will be, because not only do you know them well, they know you well, and you don't have to plan as much, I think, or you just kind of let it go with the flow. And usually the more you know someone, the more you're going to match better, whether it be more aggression or more storytelling or whatever it is, you know. And usually, or the better you are as friends, it's kind of like a the best way to describe it is literally Terry Funk and Mick Foley when they were in Beyond the Mat. And he goes, you know, it's a funny thing, you know, the more you hurt each other, the more money you make. The more money you make, the better friends you are.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it transcends to that. Like, the better you are friends, the more you'll hurt each other. The more you hurt each other, the more money you'll make. The more money you make, you'll be friends. The more you keep doing it. It's just a big cycle, I think. You know? But I think also it just makes it more natural, so the match looks and feels more realistic. And no matter what anybody says with all this acrobatic wrestling these days, the ones that people think might be real in the era of the time when they know it's a work, those are the ones that will be remembered. You know, those are the ones out of all the show matches on the card, you know, and they'll be like, oh, that one guy did that cool flip, or that one guy did that, or that one guy did that. They won't know who the person is.
Right.
Or they don't remember it the next day, but they'll remember that one match that they thought. You know, that one match, that those guys were really hitting each other. That was, all that other stuff was cool, but I really thought that one was real. And if you can suspend that disbelief now, in today's day and age, that's work.
Yeah.
That's what we do. That's what we're supposed to do. You know, and again, I credit Navajo for always teaching me that kind of stuff. That was one thing that he really taught all his Arizona boys, was suspend that disbelief and make it real, you know. You have 10 minutes.
Right.
What can you do in that 10 minutes to make it real? And that's, I think that's what he, you know, all of us were so close, us, the Ballards, Knox, that whenever we wrestled each other, there wasn't really a doubt, even with the Ballards doing 10 million moves, they didn't think it wasn't real.
Right.
Because we had that camaraderie and we weren't afraid to lay it in a little bit if we needed to, or do what needed to be done. You know,
and it also,
I remember one time when I first started, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it also helps that, you know, the guys like the Ballards are just, you know, absolutely crazy fucks themselves. So,
oh, they're insane.
Yeah.
They're fucking insane. Those fucking redheaded kids. I was just going to say though, there was one time when I first started and we were doing a lucha show, and it was one of my first lucha shows, and I rolled out of the ring again with, it was with Shannon or Shane. I can't remember. And, I remember we were right next to the crowd, and he goes, lay it in, we're right here. And I smacked him so fucking hard in the face. He still bitches about it, but he wasn't like he was mad about it, because he was like, that's what we have to do.
Right.
You know, that's what we do. You know? And they were, oh yeah, those Ballards are gamers, man.
Oh yeah.
They are gamers.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the coolest things about that time in the early 2000s, having trained at UPW. What I loved about it was that you had the Ballards, you had Daniels, you had Kaz coming up, you had,
oh, we had everybody. We had Jason Jones, Heidenreich, Samoa Joe, John Cena, Victoria, you know, when she was Lisa Marie.
Yep.
We had everybody. Rio Storm, KG Sakota, Mark Bell, Mike Bell. We had all those guys, you know.
Yeah.
Mad Dog and Smelly. You know, we had everybody there. UPW was the place to be. I remember when I first went there, and I was used to doing, you know, like the Henry Hubbard shows or the tours like that, where we had, you know, Barbarian and all those guys on it.
Right.
And next year, I'm on this show, and we've gone from, it was just a whole other world, you know? It was like, we're doing these 30-minute Broadways with the Ballards or with the Barbarian and Warlord or something, and then or Chill Gomez, and now we're doing these shows, and they're like, you have 3 to 5 minutes, and it's being taped for TV.
Yep.
And you have to do a whole match in that, and there's 22 matches on the card with some of the best talent I've ever seen.
Yeah,
you know, and you got like Tom Pritchard watching and people from Japan watching and people from all these places watching, and you're in like Paul Bearer there, and you're just like, it was so overwhelming, but it was such a good experience to get me ready for things in the future. You know, I wish I could really go back now and redo it all over, knowing what I know now, and really take advantage of it, you know.
Yep.
And I think it's nowadays, I think almost they don't I hate to say this, because wrestling is obviously picking up now, or it was before all this, but at that time, you remember, it was like you could throw a ring up in a dirt field and throw pro wrestling on a spray-painted sign and 500 to 1,000 people would show up.
Yeah.
Everybody was making money.
You know, we were flying all over the country, getting flown there on somebody else's dollar and getting paid good money.
Yep.
You know, I think by the time I was teaming with NAV after my first year, we were on the road 200 days a year, if not more.
Yeah.
And we were making good money, you know, and getting all our stuff paid for. And there was other guys making more than us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're at UPW where there's all these up-and-coming hot talents. And it wasn't like today where they're just, like, trying to be friends with everybody. Yeah, we were friends, but it was cutthroat. Like, if we got a job opportunity, we were fucking taking it. And if you were my best friend, it was me or you, we were taking it because you wanted that person to do that.
Right.
To make, you know, to get farther, to make the business hotter. You know, everybody was so hungry back there.
Yep.
So hungry to get somewhere. And that's why I think, you know, still to this day, a lot of the top guys are those guys that were in that UPW school.
Yep.
You know, Samoa Joe, John Cena, who's on top of the world, you know, Kazarian Daniels, you know, and Daniels obviously didn't train there. He was an agent.
Right.
But all these guys there, they didn't get into us that, you know, you know what you got to do? Bassman.
Yeah.
Was that guy, you know, love him or hate him, that guy could fall into a pile of shit and come out looking like gold. And he brought all these guys doing that, and he taught us all how to do that.
Yep.
You know, make the best out of the bad, and really make yourself stand out, you know, be bigger, be stronger than everybody, look the part, you know. You got to do something to look the part more, to get people to pay attention to you. Like,
yep.
There's so much stuff I learned at UPW.
What?
That, again, I think these guys, they don't get that, because a lot of these guys that are training people now haven't been doing it that long themselves, and probably should still be learning, as Kazarian used to be fond of saying back then, still practicing drop downs and leapfrogs.
Yep.
Not teaching people.
Yep.
You know, because it's not just the moves. What you get taught by a good trainer is the psychology behind it, the mindset of it.
Yep.
You know, the moves are actually secondary. It's the mindset of it. It's what you learn. I learned more from wrestling over there, listening to those vets talking.
Yep.
And traveling on the road with people than I ever did in the ring.
Yeah, that's so true. What would you say, is this a fair comparison? What Rick was doing back then with UPW, I see a little bit of that same shine here in Vegas with FSW and what Joe DeFalco's doing. Is that a fair comparison between the two guys?
Yeah, FSW is probably one of the closest things to that. And it's mainly because he has so many good
trainers
behind the scenes, you know, with like Sin Bodhi and D'Lo when he's there, and before he went to Impact, and guys like that. But again, the big difference in it all, I think, was at the time when Rick was running it, is Rick wasn't just there to help you out, too. He was trying to make money on you.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he was trying to make money for the company. And I think that's something that even FSW is still lacking, as good as they are. I don't know if Joe's actually trying to get guys signed. You know what I mean? And that's what Rick was doing, because he got a percentage of your contract.
Right, exactly.
And remember that, and the whole business at that time when in 2000s was money.
Yep.
Let's be honest. I don't think that professional wrestling is professional. It's all about money. Promoters promote to make money. Bookers book to make promoters money.
Yeah.
You know, wrestlers wrestle to make money. And I think that, as close as FSW is, that it's just missing that one little mindset of every show should be there to make money. Every guy needs to be there to draw money in. And if those guys aren't drawing money, then they're not worth being on the show. And that's a fucked up thing to say that people get mad about.
Right.
But it's true.
Right.
You know, you have your money makers. And those money makers, whether they're good at wrestling or not, are the ones who push to the top, because they bring in the fucking people for everybody else to wrestle in front of.
Right.
And your goal is to get signed. And if your goal in wrestling is just to wrestle in a local indie, and your goal isn't to be the WWE champion, which I catch Sheeta first saying all the time, they're like, there's other things to do than WWE. Yeah, there is. But guess what? No matter how you want to spin it, WWE is the pinnacle of our business.
Right.
To be the champion and to wrestle at WrestleMania is the pinnacle of our business. And if you're not actively trying to do that, whether you ever make it or not, I think you're failing in your job. You know, everyone should want to be the WWE champion. That should be your ultimate goal, no matter if you make it or not. Sorry, I went off on a rant on that right there, but I think that, again, the one thing that FSW is missing, as great as their shows are, as the talent is, I think he needs to push to try to make You know what I mean? Get the deals
with
not just help them out on the shows and see when they come. Get the deals when they come to actually actively scout your people.
Yeah.
Got to where 3 getting a paycheck for WWE, because I don't know, people don't even remember UPW now. But Ultimate Pro Wrestling is one of two developmental in the entire country.
Yep.
Rick was getting paid to train talent and have the WWE have the first pick of said talent.
Yep.
You know? Mm-hmm. Half the guys were under contract with WWE at the time and wrestling at his place. There was us and there was Louisville. And then eventually there was HWA.
Yep.
You know? And we were one of the first original developmentals in the wrestling business.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's what Rick, I think that's what Joe should shoot for, is to become something like that. For obviously, they can't do it for WWE because they progressed to the Performance Center now.
Right.
But ROH, TNA, AEW, try to become that feeder system where you get a check all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then as your guys get picked up, because you're pushing your guys at them, you get a percentage of their contract for a couple years as they move on.
Yeah.
And then those guys send people to you too. It's just the one thing in that system that's missing a cog in it. You know what I mean? He does try to get guys signed, but I think he needs to, again, something that people hate fearing in wrestling now. Everybody needs a bit more selfish.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a fucked up thing to say. People don't like it, but it's true. It's a cutthroat business. Only a small percentage of us ever make it anywhere.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Most definitely, man.
And to capitalize on that more.
Yeah, I fully agree. And now, you know, mentioning FSW, you've been there tearing it up with Hammerstone and Graves, and quite the formidable faction. How did that come about?
It's hard to say. Joe had been talking about it for a while. He was always like, I need the bullies. We need to bring the bullies in. And I'll give him that. He was one of two people to actually do it. The other one being, who was it? The BOTW in California.
Okay.
The first ones to bring the bullies in. But that was really it. Is he liked all the shit we talked. You know, because if anybody follows any of us, none of us keep our mouth shut.
Yeah.
You know, especially before, you know, Hammer was a little bit more vocal before he got signed. But, you know, and that was the thing, is like, we were, you know, we started doing it as like a joke, and it worked itself into a shoot.
Right.
You know, and Joe saw that, and I think Joe wanted it, because, you know, we had half the boys thought it was. You know, people were trying to fight me all the time, and guys were talking shit to me, and we were really bullies and stuff, and it was hilarious. So we would just feed it along.
Yeah.
You know, because if you can work the boys, you're working everybody.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, a lot of what we said was, shoot, it's just like me sitting here talking to you guys. It wasn't like we were saying anything different. It was just that a lot of guys nowadays don't have that thick skin.
Right.
And once we found someone that didn't have that thick skin, oh boy, I got fired. And Joe wanted that, you know. And honestly, if you look at it, like whatever incarnation of the bullies you have, whether it's Project Body Count, where you have me and Hammerstone and Graves, or you have the full bullies, you know, me and Dom and Hammer and Graves, or just me and Dom and Graves.
Yeah.
You got some formidable people there, you know, especially in today's day. You know, back in where I first started, if you remember. I'm still one of the small guys. I'm 260 pounds. I still would have been one of the small guys.
Yep.
Now we're some of the bigger guys.
So yep.
Hammerstone, who's Jack, you know, a firecracker on the microphone. You know, he's our mouth, or, you know, he's our face. And then you have Dom, who is not lacking in his ability to fight. He is definitely not lacking in his ability to think and to speak.
So yep.
Our mouth, you know. And then you have, and he's a vicious little Puerto Rican bastard. And then you got Graves, who's a legitimate killer.
Yep.
You know, he's the silent one. He's our killer. You know, he's the two-time world jiu-jitsu champion. He's the guy that I've seen doing, like, I still don't think he's human.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that said Morris Bison, who was in after his surgery doing 400-pound deadlifts with one arm.
Jesus Christ.
The guy is a freak of nature, you know? And when he does his jiu-jitsu, it's like, dude, I know other people that do jiu-jitsu, and they're scared of Graves because, like, it's like he's breathing. It's just him breathing what he does.
Yeah.
You know, he's start killing. And then you got me, who's the chaos, the psychopath, you know?
Yep.
I'm the muscle. You know, and I'm just the, you know, I'm just the guy that comes out there and barks at how beats the living crap out of you, whether I win or lose. And I just think all of us together, that's such an interesting group. Everybody can kind of get behind it, you know, because again, especially when we're all together, we don't give a shit. Because what are you going to say to us? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you really going to do?
Yeah.
In real life, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
You got some of the top guys right there, whether we're top as far as the money in the industry like Hammer, or we're top in the fact that everybody knows and respects us because they know we can actually wrestle and work and do what we do. You always know you come in the ring with us and you're going to have a good match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's just something that's fresh in wrestling these days, I think. And I think a lot of times people don't know what to do with that character after that gimmick after a while because it's such an overpowering gimmick. Nobody knows what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, at a certain point too, though, I think what ends up happening is that it's so believable and so chaotic and so real that after a while, the fans are either just going to hate you, period, because they buy into that, or the fans are going to start loving you because it's not the usual bullshit that you're spoon-fed.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too, is it was very organic. Like, when we started doing it, and, you know, we started, like, posting, like, the old Public Enemy, you know, band photos, and Dom would put our faces in their faces, like the NWA and everything. and people started calling us, you know, I was always called a bully. You know, I was probably the first one called a bully, and shown second, just because of how I wrestled. And then we started tagging, you know, hashtag easy bullies or bullies. And it organically grew. Like, I remember when Dom and I were feuding for a while, and then we re-teamed up, and I came out and saved him. And the only thing the crowd was chanting keepers. You know, they were chanting bullies.
Wow.
And they had never done the bullies gimmick in Arizona at the time. They painted on us tweeting about it and talking. The crowd was chanting. You know, everywhere we've gone, if all one of us or a couple of us are on the show, there's somebody in the crowd that we hear start yelling bullies.
Wow.
And it's just very organic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That bully gimmick. It's just very, it was organically created. It is real. It is how we think. It's not like when we sell somebody, we're not trying to be an asshole. It's just we're telling them, you know, how we were when I got brought up, it was a very blunt business.
Yep.
You know, you would take it, and you would take it constructively and move on with it. Nobody would waste time to tell you what you did wrong if they didn't want you to get better. But nowadays, people get butthurt about that. They want you to tell them everything they did right, not what they did wrong.
Yep.
And when you tell them what they did wrong, they get mad and they go write about it on the internet and they bury you. Well, we took that and we just ran with it.
Yeah.
And it became organic, you know. The boys thought it was real, so therefore the fans thought it was real.
Yeah.
Because it is real.
And do you think, in terms of the four of your guys together, your relationship, do you think that has made everything stronger because there's a brotherhood there and you guys really honestly get along in real life?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Oh yeah. We got each other's backs no matter what.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a real thing. Like there's very few people. I know a lot of people in wrestling. Okay. And there's a lot of people that I call friends, but if you really want to boil down to it, I have very few real friends in
right.
wrestling. You know, people I call and talk to all the time. And, you know, one of them being Val, you know, Sean Morley, mm-hmm. but you know, there's a couple others from, you know, like Nykirk and them, but my real friends, my family in wrestling, people I know I can always go to no matter what, with any problem in my real life or any problem in wrestling, is those other three people, is those bullies,
yeah.
is Hammerstone, Graves, and Dom. You know, Dom and I have been teaming for almost 10 years now. And before that, we were in a feud together for a couple of years. And so he and I were already brothers. And then Graves and Hammer came along, and it just fit. And we've been just friends ever since. You know, we just did, like, I love watching Hammerstone keep going. And I'm one of the biggest advocates telling him to keep going, leave us behind. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what we are. We're all just like a family. We want to see everybody get better and do more, you know?
So that would bring me the school, and you and Dom have been at this for a little bit now. You know, tell listeners about what it's like in terms of training at your guys, for lack of a better word, dojo.
Well, first thing, before we even get into it, on the wall in the training facility is a giant picture of Hashimoto pointing at the ring.
Nice.
So that lets you know right off the bat what that school is going to be like. And next to it is a giant poster in kanji that says Fighting Spirit.
Wow.
That's awesome.
And the minute people come in there, they get told, this isn't like any other school. Okay, this is just like you said, it's a dojo.
Yeah.
And I say that every time we have a new class. This is a dojo. You will come in here and you will respect this dojo. You will clean these mats. You will do everything necessary to make this thing a viable entity. You will keep it clean and you will respect it. And you will respect everyone in here. You don't have to like them, because you're not going to like everybody you work with, but you're going to learn starting here that you don't have to like someone to work with them.
Yeah.
You don't have to be friends, but you do have to have respect. And that's the first thing we teach. And then you go into, it doesn't matter who it is, 6 to 10 weeks of physical training before you're even allowed to be in the ring.
Yep.
You have to train around that ring for 6 to 8, 10 weeks, however long. You have to pass evals before you go on. And if you don't pass your eval, there's nothing against people, because some people haven't passed their eval. And it's not like we make fun of them or they think less of themselves. They just know they have to try harder for the next couple of weeks. And then every week they get retested until they can get in the ring. But you earn that spot in the ring. It's one of the greatest feelings when you do your eval and you tell these people and you line them up, because it's where we make everybody sit down and we don't do it really privately until later. You know, the first eval is everybody hears what everybody does. And we tell them, and it's a great thing to see someone actually break down and cry because they get the chance to get in the ring after that.
Yeah.
You know, they,
that's awesome.
They have to earn everything in our school, and that makes them respect it more. Just like I got taught, you know, you respect everything everybody's done before you, and you respect the hard work that you put in to get there. That makes you so much stronger inside. And that's something that we also teach. You know, that was a huge thing Dom wanted to make sure people know, is whether you train at our school and you actually go somewhere, or you just train and you do a local show, or you train until you just decide you don't want to do it anymore. Our goal isn't just to make you great wrestlers. Our goal is to make you a better person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything you do. Once you get that inner strength where we break you down, and you can ask some of the guys there, I'm one of the hardest trainers there are. I have a Division I college athlete in there, wrestler, and I make him puke. And he says it's one of the hardest things he's ever done, because it's just, I look at it like being a Marine. You get broken down into a pile of goo and you get rebuilt into a piece of steel.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's what I'm trying to do. And it might not be physically, it's mentally. It's all mental. I want you to be broken down and then rebuild yourself so that no matter what life throws you, you can say, I can fucking do this.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And so, like, we do, you know, we are a lot harder than most other schools. You know, you have to do 500 squats to warm up. Our beginning warm-up is about 20 minutes long.
Yep.
And it starts with 500 squats where you don't move your feet and you have to hit parallel. And it gets harder from there, you know. And that's just before you even get in the ring, to start warming up in the ring once you're at that level. And then once you're in that ring, I exhaust you before you even learn any lessons, because you cannot make it instinct and muscle memory until you are exhausted.
Yep.
And then your body is working on, you're not thinking anymore. You're just going. And that's what wrestling has to be. You know, it has to be natural. It has to be as natural as breathing and walking down the street. It has to be as natural as walking into your kitchen and opening the refrigerator. It has to be something you don't even think about doing, because it's ingrained. And the only way to do that is to get you exhausted. And then that's also the only way that you're going to learn how to protect yourself and protect others.
Yep.
You know, so we are a hard school, and not everybody makes it out. Like, we have a pretty high rate of people staying and sticking around, but we also do have a good amount that wind up realizing wrestling isn't for them. And there's nothing against them for doing that. You know, commend them for trying. And they still come around and talk to us, you know, and you hit us up. It's just some people realize that wrestling, when we do it, is a lot harder than it looks. Because, again, as we always tell them, we don't train you just to wrestle on the indie shows. We train you mm-hmm. for a job. We want you to get a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? We want you, when you go to your Performance Center tryout, you stand out, because half the drills we do are drills they do there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? We don't want just fly-by-night wrestlers. We want guys, as we tell everybody, we want you to have a career in this. And that's wow. that's what we train them for. And it's not just in the ring. We train them in psychology and talking. We sit down and have long discussions with them. You know, Dom is really good at hearing people's problems and things like that, helping out in any way we can. If any of our students have any issues once they're in, we help them out, finding jobs, having people go and help pick them up if they don't have a car. You know, we teach everybody in our school to be part of a team, but not also be individual, because it's cutthroat business.
Right.
But while training, you're a team, and back each other up. Be there. Don't just sit there and get on your phone as soon as you're done with the drill. Put that shit down. I ain't allowed in here. Get by that ring and cheer on your fucking classmates.
Yeah.
Because they're cheering you on while you're dying. And when you fall down and you're broken, they'll be the ones rolling there, pick you up and say, we can do it too, and they'll go with you.
Yep.
You know?
That's awesome. Team. That is awesome, man. That's really eye-opening, too. You know, everything's really, really crazy right now with the lockdowns and the stay-at-home orders and all that other kind of stuff that's going on. What advice do you have for someone who's either looking to stay in shape or get into shape, given the fact that, you know, going to a gym isn't exactly accessible for a lot of people right now?
Well, the first thing I would say is, and I say this, you know, because all our guys are now posting videos on our forum for them, which is a private forum, mm-hmm. of the workouts they do at home. And nice. I was, up until I got to doing stuff, I was posting daily workouts for them. But they wow. continue to do it. My biggest thing is to say, knock out the excuses.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Everybody has a fucking excuse.
Yep.
You know? But the ones that make it, the ones that go somewhere, they don't let excuses slow them down.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, if you don't have access to a gym, cool. Do you have a little tiny stretch of carpet on your floor that you could do push-ups? Because if you can do push-ups, then that's an ultimate exercise. It's a full-body exercise. You can do squats. You can do crunches. Once those become easy, start elevating your body and do it a different way. Start figuring something out. There's a million ways you can do home workouts. Are you going to get gigantically huge? Maybe not, but you're going to get lean and jacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? There's a ton of drills that we do that at the school that you can do at your home, and they do that. You know, one of them I'll say is like it was a cardio drill where they do high knees for 15 minutes in their living room, and every minute they drop down,
yep,
10 push-ups and back up, and then go back into a high knee run. You do that for 10 minutes, and your heart is beating. Let me tell you,
yeah,
your arms are blown. You're jumping in the air. You know, what I mean, you are beat up, and that's just a cardio drill. And if that gets too easy, go 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. everybody has an excuse. I tell them, I go, you know, are you sitting at home watching TV? Because if you're sitting at home watching TV, yes, you can do push-ups while you're watching TV. Mm-hmm. If there's a commercial that comes on, do push-ups till the end of that commercial. You know, when I first got started, before I met Nav, I was training at I got trained by a bullshit school that was taking my money. But the guys there that were teaching us how to get physically fit were very good at it. And for them, we would burn a deck of cards, and it wasn't the way people do it with squats. Our deck of cards was strictly push-ups.
Okay.
And we would do a deck or two of cards a day. For every minute we were late to class, we had to do 25 push-ups.
Yeah. Mm.
So
gotcha.
Let me tell you,
yep.
you start building some back muscles and chest muscles when you do that many push-ups.
Yeah.
So cards are always a huge thing. I say, if you have, and that was not me, if you have time to watch TV when a commercial comes down, get down there, flip three cards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's never why you can't do something. Just because you don't have weights doesn't mean you can't do full body exercises in other ways.
You know?
So that's the biggest thing, is to stay fit.
and always think about it. Always watch wrestling. And don't just watch like all the flippy do guys. Watch the guys that were good at psychology. Watch Jake the Snake, and don't just watch the match. Watch his movements. Right. Watch how he moves. Watch how the refs interact with people. The yep. more you get, and watch how they work the camera angles, the more you get your mind in that mindset, the easier it'll be. You know, there's, yeah. I think when I was able to train to wrestling and adapt to it so quickly is because when I was coming up as a kid, before I ever got to wrestling, I literally videotaped every single Raw from 1997 to 2000.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
And I would rewatch them. I would put a tape in whenever wrestling was on. I would rewatch it over and over again. And I watched the way they moved. And I didn't realize I was doing it then. I realize it now. And I would watch the way, like, Michaels would hit a pose. Or I'd watch the way the Taker would work the crowd. And I was like, wow, how does he do that?
Yeah.
And I thought it was real at the time, mind you. So don't get me don't think I wasn't marking out. I thought it was real. But I've never seen that. And then once I transcended into actually training, I always had in my head, what would this look like on TV? If I was wrestling right now on in WWE, what would JR call me? That was my biggest one. What would JR be saying?
Yeah.
And that was how I would train. Is how would he say if I did this? And if I did, if I thought about doing something and I thought JR would say it, if it sounded like JR would make it funny, I fucking would wipe it. But there's always ways to train, you know?
Yeah.
Like our students, like I said, we also have the form and they get a hold of us or they text us and we just have, still have discussions about things. You know, watch these matches for training. Watch how they do this. Watch how they do this. You know, tell us what you pick up out of this. And don't forget to do your push-ups and squats. There's always, that's like I said, the biggest thing for anybody, knock out the excuse. You know, make an excuse, you have time to do 10 squats.
So while you're, you know, in this wonderful quarantine and you've got all of that going on, is there something that you've watched lately that's caught your eye? Because, you know, we're talking about looking at wrestlers and how they do their work in the ring and psychology. But I think it's also valuable that if you're a great student of learning about characters, watch as much, you know, good product that's out there for, you know, learning how to act basically and learning what emotion is and how to convey things. Is there anything that you've been into recently?
As far as wrestling goes, no, honestly, to tell you the truth, I don't watch a whole lot of wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I know I don't actually like watching wrestling,
outside of wrestling, like actually in entertainment.
Honestly, I've been watching a lot. I watch a lot of, episodic TV shows. And I'm a huge comic book nerd, so I watch a lot of comic book stuff.
Nice.
But like Arrow, great show, you know.
Yep.
I watched like Arrow, I watched like I watched that Crisis on Infinite Earth, which was a fucking amazing thing. I was so marking out for that because I still have the comic book series in my comic book collection. But I watch a lot of movies and things like that, and I like watching how the actors work, you know. And I've done a few movies here and there and scenes and movies and stuff, and obviously my buddy Nykirk is an actor, and so I do watch for a lot of stuff like how they work, how they do stuff like that, how they can transcend something in a scene,
right?
You know, how they really convey what they're trying to do. Honestly, it's kind of lame how to say it, but Brad Pitt's one of the better ones at that. Like when you watch him in Snatch or you watch him in Legends of the Fall,
yep.
He's very good at, you believe him
yep.
in those.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a mark of a good actor, is someone that you can actually put yourself in his shoes and believe.
Well, I think
what's going on.
I think you brought up a, you know what, every time I watch Moneyball and he's playing Billy Bean, if I ever ran into Billy Bean at a baseball stadium, I would just be like, no, you're not really Billy Bean. That other guy in the movie, that was him. because he was so good.
As a good actor, yeah, we'll do that. He'll make it to where now he's the character, not the real life guy.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when I think of like the guy from Goodfellas, if I ever met that guy in person, I'd be like, you're not him. It's this other guy that plays him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, come on now. You're out of your mind. It's Ray Liotta, you know? So.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know? The Irishman. Have you seen The Irishman yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Right there.
Yep.
Right there.
Yeah.
You got some of the best actors in the world. You believe every character.
Yep.
Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that guy's Jimmy Hoffa now.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Al Pacino, you believe every role he is, you know?
Yeah.
Those guys. Watch how they do it.
Most definitely.
And I think that is, and I tell my students this, and I tell everybody that if I'm critiquing their matches, the thing that makes them great is they believe what they're doing, you know? Like even
right.
Heath Ledger. You know, Heath Ledger, when he played the Joker, you fucking believed he was the Joker because guess what?
Oh, yeah.
He believed it.
Yep.
You know? And that's what people have to watch in those things. And I tell them that when they critique their match. That stuff was cool, but I didn't believe it. You want to know why I didn't believe it? Mm-hmm. Because you didn't believe it. You knew you were just doing a move. You were just doing something that was called, or, you know, you have to actually believe what you're doing is real for someone else to watch it and believe it's real. And just like when you watch a good actor, again, like one of those people, you believe them because they believe it's real.
Yeah.
You know, at the time they are doing that, they believe it's real. They, especially the ones that, the method actors, that get into that. You know, one of my favorite, always look at when I say anything, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because of I believe him, is Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
When he played it, I don't give a shit about this new bit. Tim Curry, it, because he was so fucking scary.
Yep.
Because he wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
And he is so used to having to transcend in theater to when he does, it is so believable. You know, when he played Legend, when he played Darkness and Legend, you don't even realize that's Tim Curry, and that's not because of the costume. It's because you believe he's really the Darkness.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
When he plays the role in Home Alone 2, you really believe he's that prick behind the counter.
Yeah.
You know? He is just such a good method actor.
Yep.
You believe. Tim Curry is one of my favorite actors for that because I believe him. You know? He is most so definitely. Good.
Yeah.
Definitely, man.
So that,
yeah. And so we've covered a lot of ground today. But I still have to ask, as we're starting to wind down here, what is something that our listeners would be surprised to know about Gallo that we haven't discussed so far today?
Besides the fact that a lot of people would know that I love gardening, since I always post all my pictures when I have my gardens.
That's awesome, man.
I really don't know. I think I'm pretty out there. You know, everybody, like, I'm pretty, you know, actually, there's a lot that people don't know, because honestly, a lot of stuff that I put on my social media, whether even if it's the real life, like my gardening, that's not me.
Right.
My character is Gabriel, but that's not who I am. You know, I make a very good separation from my character and from my real life. I don't want a lot of people to know my real life. And that's something that a lot of people, I think, nowadays also don't understand.
Right.
I don't want every fan to be my friend.
I don't.
And that's not a knock against the fans, because we need them. But you need to separate yourself from your character, because you can't be, I can't be that, as much as that Hellhound character is real, that's what I believe in and everything. I have to have that separation because it's not me. I need time to be just me.
Right.
And Gallo, you know, mm-hmm. I need to be the guy that goes to heavy metal concerts or goes and sits and trains in the cables with Frank Sinatra. You know, I need to be that person outside of the character. I don't want everyone to know what's going on in my personal life. I make that. I've done very well years with that. That very little of my personal life is known, because I don't want everyone to know it. And people, if you don't separate yourself, that you're always in that role, and you're always that public figure, it makes you egotistical. It makes you crazy. You start to lose your shit, and I think you burn out quicker because you never have time to be you.
Right.
you know, and you does not involve the world. I hate social media for that reason, because it makes everybody think they have a voice and that they can talk to everybody and do all this shit. And I don't give a shit what everybody says. I really don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, me.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the secret. As much as I'm vocal and all this stuff on the internet, I'm actually very private. And what you read is not what's going on. I am a very different person. As much as I am that character, I am a very different person. You know, I do enjoy reading. And when I read lots of things, you know. I've been reading since I was six. You know, I got taught how to read when I was five by my mom. I do like to draw and do art. I do like to do all these things. I just don't broadcast them out there.
Right.
It's none of anybody's business. You know. And I don't think, and I'll say that to be rude, I don't think everybody, I should know everybody else's business either.
Right.
You know?
Right.
True.
So,
that's
probably what the biggest take is from me, is that I'm actually a very private person. And that my character is me times a thousand, but actually, I'm quite different.
So for those people who are looking to follow you on social media, what are your handles, and what is the information for the school if people want to look into it and are interested in possibly, you know, starting to train in Arizona?
Well, my handles I got a lot of social media handles. usually it's like on Twitter and Instagram, it's at King of No Rules. On Facebook, it's either Gabriel Gallo or King of No Rules is my fan page. King of No Rules, Gabriel Gallo. I also have a Gab account, which is at King of No Rules. I have a library account, which is, again, at King. Everything is pretty much at King of No Rules. My YouTube channel is at King of No Rules. I have, like, a Steemit account. Pretty much everything, if you search King of No Rules, you're going to find me. Or King of No Rules, Gabriel Gallo. As for the school, on Instagram is at TrainAZ, or you can search the hashtag TrainAZ, or you can reach out and contact Dom, you know, at his Twitter handle, Dom L. Baum, or his Facebook, or you can contact John Wolfgang through his Facebook. He's our office guy. He's the other owner of the school. It's him and Dom that own it, and I'm just the head trainer. John Wolfgang is another guy that can, I don't know his handle off the top of my head, but I'm sure if you search him, you can reach out to him and he'll tell you anything you want to. We also have a website, which is, I believe, I can't remember what it is right now, because I always just go to the Instagram. But I believe it's, Arizona ProTrainingCenter.com or Arizona Pro Wrestling TrainingCenter.com. Again, everything though is located on the Instagram. If you go on the Instagram and you go on the summary, it's all right there. So just search the hashtag TrainAZ, and you'll find it. There's plenty of stuff on there.
So
we are open for everybody. We only do a couple tryouts a year once we reopen again, and then once that class is filled, it's filled until we do another tryout.
Yeah.
So just contact us and get your name on the list if you're interested, and someone will get back with you as soon as the next class is available. And you'll have to do a tryout, and if you pass the tryout, then you're invited to come to the school.
Excellent. So, that's the way to do it. Awesome. Well, you know what, Gallo? It's been a pleasure. I'm so glad you took the time today to talk with us. We'll let you get back to the garden out there. And
I have to plant a bunch of peppers and stuff right now, actually. So
nice. Well, enjoy your time, and hopefully we'll be able to see you live again very soon, man.
All right, thank you very much. I can't wait to go ripping and howling and beating people up again in front of you guys someday soon.
Well, we can't wait for it either, man. We appreciate it, brother. Thank you once again, Gallo, for joining us today, and thank you for listening. Check out the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting on all social media platforms as well. Follow us, like us, and don't forget to subscribe and download and listen to the show. And tell your friends to check us out as well. Until next time, take care, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Bad Boys of Podcasting.